Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Chris Casso.
Hello.
Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
And Cole Hornaday.
Hey.
How's everybody doing?
Spiffy.
My beard got smaller.
Yes.
Oh my goodness, I didn't even notice. I'm a terrible friend.
I noticed.
Your beard got smaller.
Wow. He looks
threats.
So good.
There were threats.
It's like, because you were like, you know.
Were these threats coming from Nicole?
They
were
just from Nicole.
They were snip threats.
Hey, oh. That was just, you know, it's like the Parent Trap where you're sleeping and they cut your hair. That's all. It's not anything bad.
I mean, his beard had become like Mount Fuji epic. It like there were creatures living in there.
No, he's a clean boy.
No, that doesn't mean he's dirty. It just means he gave opportunity to creatures to live there.
Warm.
Because he's a kind and loving person.
Like from Rat Queens.
Yes.
There's the day with the blue beard.
See?
The blue beards of healing.
The blue birds in the beard of healing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Something heals. I don't know.
All Mount right. Fuji Epic. That's a thing now.
Okay.
It's a total thing now.
Fuji Epic.
Fuji Epic.
I don't even know what that means. But let's talk about what's happening in the world of comics, friends. And let's talk about what's happening here at Comics Dungeon. What's selling? What's selling this week? And what should be selling?
We're all off kilter.
Yeah, we're so off kilter.
We've had 2 weeks in a row of late shipments. So my Wednesdays are now my Mondays, and my Fridays became my Thursdays. And this Thursday is a long Thursday.
Does your schedule get, like your personal in-store schedule, does it have to fluctuate with these mists?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So like this week, Love the Dinosaur.
Oh, yeah. In.
So there's the art books, the Love series, which are painted books following the a different animal, each volume, a day in the life of that animal. And
they're prose-less. They're just all images. Yeah.
And there's been lion, there's been tiger, and there's been fox. And then the fourth one, he's like, dinosaur.
Yes.
Like, yes, I approve of this decision.
Yes, we all approve of this decision.
So we think that should be selling. And I don't know. What else, Nicole? What else?
Oh, Lady Castle just came out this week. And I'm going to pretend like I read it and it was really awesome. But that's the future. So
May Collection?
The May Collection.
The May Collection, Volume 1.
Haas, yeah.
Yep.
The Hellboy Winter Special came out. And that looks like fun. And let's see here.
Because even though Hellboy's dead, we can still have adventures with him.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's the Saga Shudder Star Wars, and there's one other one that's like always
week.
Like big, chunky things that always sell really well.
Mm-hmm. The Black Monday Murders.
Yes.
Trade paperback came out finally.
That is by Jonathan Hickman.
I've never read that. Is that any good?
It's very good.
I'm being facetious.
I poked my nose through the microphone. I was so excited.
Oh, and I will push this this Beowulf hardcover from Image. It's a graphic novel release by Santiago Garcia and David Rubin, and it is an adaptation of the Beowulf story, and it's got fantastic artwork, beautiful stuff.
Why do you think they still keep adapting that story? I mean, sometimes there are, for a while there were like three or four different film adaptations, mm-hmm. some of them, you know, straight to video, set in different time periods, different eras, and it keeps coming around to comics and coming around to comics again and again and again. And
I mean, it's one of the first stories.
Are they sticking to the... Yeah, it is the very first epic hero story. But in, like, for example, this one, do they stick to...
I haven't read it all through.
Okay.
But it seems to be pretty...
Maybe they take some license.
It has, like, some meta moments at the end, too, where, like, after, like, everybody's kind of died and the legend becomes stories passed down, then the printer's in the print, then it turns into the comic you're holding. So, I don't know. I'm actually a little more surprised we don't have as much Gilgamesh happening right now. But I think that's, like, a cycle thing of different heroes. Like, we haven't had much King Arthur lately, but I think that cycle's about to pick up because there's like a whole nother King Arthur movie coming out.
Yeah, gotcha. By Guy Davis.
Yeah, so it's just
Lock,
like,
Stock, and King Arthur barrels.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was watching the trailer and I was like, is this a guy?
Lock, Stock, and Guinevere?
Yes.
Lock, Stock, and Two Shining Blades.
Yeah. Anyway, we got off a little
all right.
off topic.
Yeah. Oh, that's all right. I'm just arguing with the news features here because what I want to talk about is there's going to be an animated Spider-Man film which might come out late 2018, and it's been confirmed that Miles Morales is going to be Spider-Man in the animated film.
Yeah, and it's by the same people who did the Lego movie, which I have somewhere here, Chris Miller and Philip Lord. And they're behind the Lego movies. So it could be really fun. It could be really good. I mean, if it's following anything like those movies, then we're going to be in for a fun time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was fun. That was fun. That should be nice.
We could just say fun forever.
Something else that I want to talk about. I sent this to you all, and it was it's a link to a Twitter posting. And I called it, Will It Never Die? Because we just talked about this, where we said Ron Perlman was like, there's not going to be a Hellboy 3. Guillermo and I are too busy. But then Guillermo del Toro goes and puts a poll on his Twitter feed saying, informal poll. Let's see how many votes we get in 24 hours. Hellboy 3?
I missed that.
And so there was either you can vote yes or you could vote hell yes. And so it was 62% yes. 32% yes, and 68% hell yes. So what do you think this means? I mean, I know the poll is an informal poll, and it doesn't they're now legally obliged to make a movie, but...
No.
Go ahead.
It said in the Twitter, like, if it gets to, 100,000, I'm going to sit Mike Mignola down and Ron Perlman, and we're going to have a discussion about this. Like, maybe we legitimately are going to do this. And I just thought it was, how much pull do they have with the audience? You know, how much people are looking for it that they could bring it into light because they're like, see all these people who are really excited. We should totally make this movie.
What was the number he said he wanted? How many did?
I think it was 100,000.
See, that no studio would accept that as a reason. Just like, yeah, so whatever.
Mm-hmm. He says 100,000, and I promise a serious sit down with Mignola and Perlman.
Yeah.
And he tweeted this on January 18th, and he said he was halfway there. I don't know how many. There were 132,938 total votes. So I guess he wanted 200,000 votes. Mm. Yeah. So it's not going to happen. Yeah. End of story.
But yep,
what's interesting is that it does keep coming back around again with a certain degree of regularity. And I don't know. He's one of my favorite characters.
Yeah.
Some may say he is my favorite character.
He's one of my favorite directors and one of my favorite actors. So
yeah, and there's some things that never die, and then there's something like Blade Runner that's going to get another movie that actually looks pretty cool.
That teaser tickled me.
Yes.
It tickled my imagination.
The undercarriage. Who is
that? That's like a Gosling? Is that Ryan Gosling?
Yeah, okay. I think that's a good pick. I like Ryan. Yeah.
But sometimes it's just a question of things syncing up, right?
Yeah.
Different aspects of studio, money, artists, all coming together. Because, that old man said he'd never make a Star Wars movie again. Granted, that wasn't always the best thing to happen. But what ultimately did happen was that we experienced this rebirth, this regenesis of the Star Wars thing, so things sync up again.
And we are headed towards a Blade Runner-type dystopian future.
Yeah, I mean, it's inevitable. Yep. So
we need to form a Kickstarter to help protect Ron Perlman, because he's getting a little bit older.
But that's a lot of red makeup and a big stone hand. He'll be fine.
Oh, he'll be fine.
We just need him to into his survive.
To keep him alive.
We just need him alive. Yeah,
we need to get.
Actually,
we need to kickstart
a
body
that anymore.
I know that's true.
Oh no,
true.
Let's not do that.
But we're not quite there where we can completely replace people with holographic images.
With the Uncanny Valley right now, people. I really, really do.
All right, going back briefly, one last thing too about Blade Runner, even though it's not on the show sheet,
but it should have been.
I know it should have been. We'll talk about it later.
It's fine.
We all have our opinion on whether or not Deckard is a replicant, and it's unambiguous for a reason. You can point to for both reasons, yes and no. But we saw Deckard in the trailer for the new Blade Runner. Nicole's making this elaborate face.
In slow motion,
like you're screaming in space.
Silent scream.
What do you have to say about that?
I think that is going to be the issue of the film. That's what's going to be on the table. Is he or is he not? I think that's the whole crux of the freaking film.
I would love it.
I am tired of the discussion. I think we should just get it out of the way and deal with it.
All right. So
his feathers are thoroughly
fluffed. Is he not?
I always thought he was. Uh-huh. Right. All signs pointed towards him being a replicant. Even though Harrison Ford was like, he's not a replicant. Uh-huh. But replicants had a lifespan.
Right.
So what's going on? So he's not a replicant.
To wait and see.
Anyway, I can't wait to see the movie. It's gonna probably like gonna come out like 2019.
It's 10 months away.
Is this Christmas? Okay.
It's November.
What, Cole?
Nobody lives forever. She won't live forever.
Ron Perlman can't.
But then again, who does?
Some people need to be immortal.
You know, that's I'm really looking forward to that movie.
He just reminded me of that quote from Rick and Morty. Nothing is important. Everybody dies. Come watch TV.
Oh, that show's so good.
All right. So so we a couple weeks ago, we actually talked about the Rep. John Lewis's book, March Book 3, the third in the trilogy of the March series, winning a National Book Club Award. Well, it came in into the spotlight again because of politics. Sometimes Trump happens. And so what happened was the book started just selling out of Amazon, and not coincidentally, the largest best-selling book on Amazon right now is 1984. But March Book 3 just recently won the Walter Dean Myers Award for Outstanding Children's Literature. Mm-hmm. Which I think is really great. I have nothing more to say about that. Okay. But did you guys sell out of March Book 3? Was there a big run on it?
We didn't have too much on hand when that happened. The thing is, we had a guy coming and asking that day that Trump tweeted. And then I had remembered that happened. And I looked over to Nicole and I was just like, oh, I think we're going to have a few more of those.
I think at least one or two more
that day.
Did you smell a deluge?
Yes. Mm. So the thing is that they're sold out at Amazon, but they're not sold out through the comic distribution line.
Yes.
Diamond had tons of them in stock still. So I went ahead and just more, please.
And then a few more.
And then a couple
more. And then
more.
Some more.
Like three separate
after
orders.
Because
yep. At first it was just I'll just do another three or four. And then it started blowing up the internet sphere. And then I pink Scott. I'm like, can I just order? Whatever. And he was yeah. So we should see those in they should be here now at this point in time in the future of the past.
That's right.
And this
episode will be airing on January 30th, 2017.
Yeah, okay.
Probably by next time.
I thought it was interesting. The article that you linked to for this was from WeNeedDiverseBooks.org.
Which is an organization that awards this award.
Yeah, and the Walter Dean Myers Award, also known as the Walter, is named for prolific children's and young adult author Walter Dean Myers, who was alive from 1937 to 2014. And Myers was the third national ambassador for young people's literature appointed in 2012, as well as a champion of diversity in children's and young adult books. And the Walter's mission is to honor Myers' memory and his literary heritage, as well as celebrate diversity in teen literature. And then they also, I thought that was really cool and interesting, and they actually donate to 2,000 books to either a school or a library or something like that in need.
They say they're going to be donating a minimum of 2,000 across the U.S. to schools with limited budgets.
Yeah, which is great because every school has a limited budget.
No kidding.
Right, and it's probably only getting tighter. So I think that is fantastic and totally in line with what we're all for, too. So I thought that was really cool.
Get that book into more kids' hands.
Yeah, totally. And comic books, not being just literary junk food, as we like to talk about, showing it that you can learn about history, you can read autobiographies of different people, and learn about stuff through comic books. I think that's a great way and a great tool to have in classrooms. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
There was just a book that came out a little while ago about Agatha Christie.
Yep, there you go.
Really?
Yeah. pretty much now, every couple of weeks now, there's just some sort of history book kind of popping up.
And which is
book.
So cool.
Bio book. There was one about, forget his first name, Robert Moses, the guy who designed most of New York. And just you figured that would be a good comic book to make? It was very educational, and I appreciated it.
Wow. So. Cool.
Cool beans.
All right. Moving on, Jeff Lemire. Lemire. Anyway, he's leaving Old Man Logan, and I wrote in the show sheet, I'm beginning to see the authors jumping on and off projects is a very common occurrence, because every week I'm like, hey, this guy's not writing this book anymore. Is that
it's,
big?
It's not like somebody being traded off to another team. The analogy doesn't work for you, Ben. You're going to have to shift your vision to reality.
I'm always thinking sports.
It is a little bit like that, because you'll see somebody off, but on another title.
Yeah.
Like, that happens. Like, Al Ewing was on New Avengers, and now he's doing U.S. Avengers, which is kind of the same title, book, but just called something different. But, yeah.
Now I really want there to be, like, seasonal trade-offs in comic books.
It would make it,
who's stuck with Bendis for this next quarter?
And they're like a trading deadline and a salary cap.
Who compliments Bendis? Or who tempers Bendis? Who makes him easier to digest Bendis?
Who does Avatar bribe so that they could have the big names to, like, murder bad people, you know.
It's not too often, but sometimes we see
crossed.
Like
it was, I got the cross thing. I appreciate it because you're my friend and you love me because I get that.
We see the Dan Slotts who have taken over, Spider-Man for 8 years or a lot of years. Jonathan Hickman, who was able to do a new Avengers run for a few years and then do this big crossover and have it be his final, farewell for now. Mm-hmm. And so that's more likely you're going to see smaller titles just with people on and off things.
Just bouncing
around. And Jeff Lemire is everywhere now. He's in everything.
Him and Matt Kent are buddies that one of them's like, hey, I just got a job at Valiant. Put a word in for me. And it was now they're together again.
It's Cullen Bunn started a club and everyone who joined, they praised Mamon or whatever the guy is in Black Monday Murders or whatever. Murders. Yeah, and then instead of murder, they just created a million comic books to sell throughout.
So something to watch, though, and something that I try to watch is the sort of the explosion of creativity from a handful of writers, and then whether they burn out or whether their tool set refines. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes, you'll watch somebody like Lemire, who writes 20 books a month right now?
Right.
and is amazingly creative, and then they will burn out, and then you will not see them again, which is really sad. But that's also the artist's burden of having that carrot dangled in front of them. It's like, I'm finally making money to do what I love.
Gotta get it out.
A star that shines twice as bright shines half as long.
It happens in comics particularly, I believe. I really believe it does.
It's a rough industry with schedules and everything like that, so...
Just one last bit of this. We were joking around last week, I think, and we were like, well, these people who keep on doing tons and tons of work, they all kind of pop up at the same time. It's they should merge into one Voltron-esque creation.
Yes.
And so I think it was Matt Kent and Jeff Lemire were the arms,
mm-hmm.
and Cullen Bunn and Charles Soule were the legs.
It sounds right.
And the head was Jordi Belair.
Yes, yes.
Because she's
colorist.
The colorist who
she's
does everything.
She's the colorist
everything.
Who's everywhere, coloring everything. I think she's from Scotland or something.
I think they
just
need to form one company amongst themselves.
Yes, seriously.
Yeah.
The newest of image, something else, I don't know.
You're right.
A brighter image.
A brighter image.
For a brighter future. All right.
Like that. That's
moving on. So DC's Free Comic Book Day top secret titles were announced. Now, I saw something online, and maybe you also talked about this, where it was either DC or Marvel, and they're like, we're not going to tell you what... these titles are, so order them.
We've done that a bunch,
And I saw somebody, I think it was on Reddit or something, he does what you do, and he's like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to not order this.
They announced them. They weren't even big surprises. One of them's just here's a reprint of our kids' book. That's you mean that one that's already existed?
It was too big to announce because they didn't have anything in order yet.
No. And the other one was just a reprint of Wonder Woman with a preview of a future Wonder Woman graphic novel, which is probably another origin story because we got four of those this year.
It says it's a 32. The preview is a 32-page excerpt from the upcoming DC Superhero Girls : Summer Olympus by Shea Fontana and Yancet Labatt.
And that should be fun, and it's good that we'll have that because you want to have a lot of kids' titles, and DC and Marvel are really bad with doing kids' titles, so...
Does it sound
as in releasing anything?
Does it sound like they just kind of they ran out of time and they just pulled something out of overstock.
DC sounds like that. I mean, it makes perfect sense. Last year, it was like, here's a Suicide Squad reprint. Suicide Squad reprint.
Squad.
I would do your squats at the gym.
I would totally read that book.
That's Suicide Squad. It's a new workout routine.
I was thinking Suicide Squadron Supreme, but...
So it's like, okay, yeah, Wonder Woman for the movie, like, I can't fault you on that.
Right.
Yeah. Please make a brand new thing that's not a preview or a reprint. Mm-hmm. Marvel's Classified sounded like they actually kind of had a story, so...
It might be leading into their summer event or whatever they're doing.
It's their Captain America event.
Right, so, yes, yes.
The Secret Empire.
Yes, that's what it's called, the Secret
Empire.
Which is an
old Marvel terrorist group that if you... are too bored with Hydra, you bring up the Secret Empire. So, I don't know. Whatever. Might be interesting.
So it's like a triumphant between AIM and Hydra and then the Secret Empire. Empire. I don't have any recollection of the Secret Empire. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. They're a secret.
And moving on.
Oh, boy.
Finally, in the news today, Scribd has ended its comic subscription service, and this caught my attention. Well, it caught Chris's attention. I just yanked it off of his Comics Dungeon Rant newsletter every Monday, because this was actually a topic on our very first episode, was that Scribd is starting up this comic subscription service, and now it's ending, so I feel that we've come full circle.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
I got nothing else to say about this. I don't really care. I don't read comics online.
It was just a simple supply and demand, I think. Like, they just weren't getting a lot of people because Comixology is sort of taking over everything, and now that it's got...
It's backed by Amazon.
The Amazon thing, it's kind of this big monster you can't
there
really
There still are
with.
Some others that you could look through, and I wish I could remember one the name of one that actually was really cool because it was creating new content, and it hired our sisters who did our Faith covers.
Oh, yeah, Kelly and Nicole
I
Matthews.
I can't remember the name of that, but so there's a bunch more still in existence, because I think they offer a little more than just one more hosting site.
Yeah, something different than just what you could get on Comixology, like some of creator-owned
unique
thing.
Unique content.
Unique.
Cool. All right. Well, that's the news this week, and let's move on to Book Report, and let's start with you, Nicole. What did you read this week?
So I read, not ready yet. So I read Grave Lilies number one by one of the legs, Colin Bunn.
One of the legs. You know, you guys sit around the shop all day and come up with all this really crazy, cute, fun stuff.
You know, a lot of
stuff
is off the cuff.
And then Ben and I show up and we're like, because we're not really part of the clique because we don't have these clever things to say.
But we brought you in by telling you about it.
Yeah, and we brought all our audience, and so now you can talk about it.
I feel like I have clever things to say.
These are the jokes.
Not clubby things like these kids do.
Oh, clubby.
They have clubby things, yeah.
All right. Anyway, Grave Lilies.
Yeah, sorry, Nicole.
My other marriages are to Chris and Leanne, apparently, so that's just to put it into context.
Okay,
a lot of my time is spent here. So it's written by Colin Bunn, and the art is by George Cambades. I don't know. I'm terrible at this, and I apologize. Mm-hmm. So this follows... I do have notes on this somewhere. I have a comics journal now, guys. Okay, I'm getting really organized with my life.
Look at you.
So an explosion releases five containment units. There's a big explosion in front of some business building. And it's got five containment units with young women inside. They can't remember anything, but are familiar with one another. They know each other's names. But they said, like, they can remember everything and nothing. Like, they just can't pinpoint anything. So they've got all this information in them, but they're not sure what it is. And each woman has a specialized ability. Like, one is, like, the leadership, persuasive, like, speechcraft person. One of them's got like healing and med abilities. One's does stuff with botany and can bring things to life. She's kind of, I guess, a Poison Ivy-esque kind of character. There's one who's really good with hunting and tracking and that sort of thing. And then one unfinished model her name is Elsie, and she is very unresponsive, but she's just sort of walking around. She just looks kind of like a robot. But you find out that she's skilled in murder? Yeah. And they're on the run, but they don't know what they're on the run from. They just are like, we've got to get out of here. And then people start chasing them, and they're like trying to figure their whole thing out. And the art is pretty clean. Like, it kind of gave me some thoughts of, I gotta get organized, thoughts of, like, a little bit maybe, like, a Chris Samney mixed with, like, a Oni Press sort of artist. You know, yeah. It's a clean, it's got some good, like, tonal colors over it. And I think it was a pretty solid first issue as far as kind of getting, there's some secret governmental something, I'm sure, you know, and they're getting to know who these girls are. And getting kind of the gist of, you know, what's to come. I'm still experiencing this reading new things and then being like, that was all right. Next, you know, like it, but that's my own bias of just having massive consumption of comics all the time. I think that this is a fun story, especially if you like some of the stuff that like Boom has been doing. If you like a Lumberjanes, a Goldie Vance, Giant Days, things like that sort of vein. I think it fits right in. But it's this sort of sci-fi-y element. Mm-hmm. So I would recommend it to those people. I probably won't continue reading it. Maybe I'll give it another issue and see where issue 2 goes, because that can be pretty telling. But I don't think I'll personally be adding this to my own personal subscriptions. So, yeah.
Cool. All right.
Grave Lilies number 1.
Great. Thanks, Nicole. Mm-hmm. Cole Hornaday, what about you, sir?
Well, I finally got my hands on the trade paperback of Image's Monstrous, written by Marjorie Liu and illustrated by Sana Tadeka. This reprints the first 6 issues, the first story arc. And for those not in the know, this book has just sort of like, you know, taken over. I watched the first print of the first issue on eBay like go up to over $100 in like a couple of months, and I regretted not buying it. It's a really interesting fantasy epic. Marjorie Liu is a wonderful storyteller, and but unfortunately I forget that I've read so much of her work. Like I mentioned her, talked to her a couple months. Where are we now?
I don't know. It was a while ago when you were doing NYX.
Yes,
right?
NYX, yeah. Knicks, mm-hmm. and she's a very prolific storyteller. Takeda has been around in the industry for a while. The story is set in a reality where magic and science sort of coexist, and it has a very manga anime sensibility, because you've got very stark, realistic imagery paired with cute characters, diminutive animal characters, and things like that. The story moves at a fever clip. It's not for kids. It's surprisingly violent. But it looks like a manga book that might be targeted or aimed at kids, and it's really not. It's a contained reality. It's beautifully illustrated, I recommend it. But I'm probably not going to read any more of it. There was so much to it that just was very clearly not for me. And there's nothing wrong with the book. I have nothing but positive things to say about what is happening here and what is being done with it. But it was clearly not written for me. And that's okay. Exactly. I started seeing a lot of things that were repetitive in the way of manga and anime types of tropes. You know how I feel about the steampunk thing. That is a major overarching design element.
It's a lot of Art Deco design.
I don't care for the filigree and the steam-driven machinery and things like that. The story of this character trying to find herself and succumbing to the evil around her and things like that. It was compelling, and yet it didn't speak to me. And like I said, that's okay. Mm-hmm. What I loved is that it's a really powerful book. It's really well done, but it's not written for me.
A lot of us live for Tana. Uh-huh. Tana is the big gray cat with the eye patch, man.
Right. There were some great elements.
He's the best.
Yeah. You mean Dr. Tana, no. The supporting character. One of the things I liked about
it. He shows up like towards the end. Right. And he's just, kicking butts.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, right. The more brutal one.
He's eye patch, man.
Yeah, he's like the Puss in Boots
guy.
Yeah.
But he's like chubby.
Yeah.
One of the things I liked about the structure is that between each of the books, chubby.
I feel for
chubby
cats, man.
It's just a way to call her face with that.
And I was too busy. Yeah. I was too busy trying to find my place in the book, and I missed it. I'm sorry. They do a cute expositional thing where this character named Professor Tam Tam, who is this cat with there's all these anthropomorphic cats in this book, and they all talk, and they have multiple tails.
Yeah.
Anyway, Professor Tam Tam will show up and give you a little lecture on how the world works and stuff like that.
So you get, little history bits and mythos, throughout. Yeah. She just releases. It's a slow release of information.
It just reminded me too much of other properties. You know, it reminded me of aspects of Attack on Titan. It reminded me of, Full Metal Alchemist and stuff like that. It just doesn't appeal to me.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Monstrous Awakening. Is that the first trade?
It's the first collection.
Cool. All right.
It's been in our top 10 seller list for the store for most of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Most of last year.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, definitely this year.
All right. Cool. Thanks, Cole.
You bet.
Chris Casso, what do you got?
I read Ed Brubaker's new series, Kill or Be Killed. I had read the first issue a while back, and then I just sat down and read the full trade. It's Ed Brubaker writing, Sean Phillips, his usual co-conspirator on art. For those of you who've read Criminal or Fatal or Fade Outs, it's another one of those.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell what the story is about real quick, and then I'll touch on my feel on it. It follows this guy who's like a college student who tries to commit suicide and fails, and then a demon shows up, and it's just like, well, you owe me a life. And so he tells the kid, like, you've got to go kill somebody once a month. And, you know, that's your cost of your life. And the kid at first thinks he's hallucinating. And then bad things start to happen to him. And he feels really sick. And he's pretty convinced it's actually a real thing. And the moment he's just like, he mentally tells himself, I'm going to murder somebody, he feels better. So he starts becoming a killer vigilante. And that's most of it without giving away too much more. When I've read the first issue, I read it and it was just fine, but I didn't care. Mm-hmm. And when I read this one, it's the same thing. Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips are very good creators. They're masters of their craft. They are specifically masters of crime noir.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a very good example of all that. If you liked all their previous books, you're going to love it. Mm-hmm. The thing for me, though, is I'm at that phase that Nicole mentioned where you're just like, that's fine, meh. Where all Brubaker to me is kind of the same now.
Mm-hmm.
He loves noir. And everything's noir, and everything is like, oh, here's horror with noir. Here is a 1940s noir. Here's a modern noir. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this one is him being kind of like, here's pulpy supernatural noir again. The main character is not likable, and I know that's kind of the point of noir, but he's mm-hmm. like, most noir characters are at least interesting if they're not likable. This is a whiny kid.
Mm-hmm.
His girlfriend, not girlfriend, like his best friend who he's in love with, but then she becomes the girlfriend of his roommate. She's horrible. She's not a nice person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they try to kind of make you care about her, and I'm just like, no. Because she starts messing around with the main character behind his best friend, his roommate's back. And then you're like, maybe I should feel sorry for the roommate. No, he's like a dude, bro. Like, nobody in here do I like. And there's a character that shows up, and I'm like, oh, is that a character from Criminal? No, he just looks the same.
Oh, dear.
Because a lot of Sean Phillips stuff just kind of looks the same after a while.
Which a lot of artists have that,
they
but
do.
It depends.
Yeah.
Like, in Fatal, I got very confused because of his art. Yeah.
And I love his art. His paintings are
still
amazing.
Really great. It just...
But it reinforces my feeling of it's more of what I've seen too much of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I kind of need to take a break. So I'm not going to say it's a bad book at all because it's obviously good. My problem is I've got that overexposure thing going
mm-hmm.
and a little Brubaker burnout kind of going.
Yeah. See, I pick and choose my Brubaker so I don't burn out on him because not every jam is probably going to be my
jam. I find myself mm-hmm. not finishing all the series.
Yes.
Like I started Fatal, haven't finished it. Started Fade Out, haven't finished it. Enjoy them. But there's something about it that just doesn't, I don't have that forward momentum.
Doesn't quite hook.
So would you say library?
I'd say a library edition.
So Kevin, get it from the library.
Yeah. But I would also say if you just know that you like all their work, you will like this.
Definitely.
It is more of the same. That can be good or bad, you know. It is only $10, which is a really great value. It's a good chunk of reading. So it's definitely worth it, you know. It's not gonna cost you too much if you just wanna have more to your Brubaker collection.
Gotcha.
So, cool. Yeah. All right, kill or be killed. Thank you, Chris. And I got a surprise for y'all. I'm gonna review one today.
What are you talking about?
I'm gonna do a Rick and Morty Volume 1. Now I've already reviewed a Rick and Morty comic 6 months ago, a long time ago, and that was just because I don't read comics all that often, and so when my eyes scan the racks here at Comics Dungeon, they immediately fall on known quantities, and so Rick and Morty, I'm like, oh, Rick and Morty, I like Rick and Morty, and so my original review was basically it's fine, but it lacks what makes the cartoon so awesome, and that was
the
vocalizations.
Yeah.
So I thought. I'm in a really big Rick and Morty like desert now because it's been like a year and a half since the last, and they keep teasing season 3. Nobody knows when it's going to air, and like somebody hacked IMDb and said, oh, season 3, January 9th. And we were like, clear your schedule. But no, that turns out not to be true. So I actually bought Rick and Morty volumes 1 and 2 because I'm like, I'll buy them. I read volume 1. And I actually did enjoy it. Once I let go of the whole, it's not going to be the same, and I was able to enjoy it on its own, mm-hmm. I did like it. I have two complaints about it. And one is that I guess the floppies were structured in a way to where the first two issues was like a two-parter. Mm-hmm. And then it was episodic thereafter. Mm-hmm. And so you get to, you're like, oh, okay, so this is one big adventure. Mm-hmm. And you get to, like, the end of one story. And I don't know if I want to give it away if it's a spoiler. Jerry walks in on Summer, apparently dead in the living room.
Whoa.
You know? And he, like, drops his bag and you're like, ah! And then, like, end of story, next story. And I'm like, oh, what's going to happen? And then it becomes a completely different story, and it was kind of jarring. I'm like,
well, but Rick and Morty, how many times have they all died, and there's different iterations, and in this verse it's like,
yeah,
this Rick
exactly.
and Morty,
like,
but yeah,
it's Cronenberg
buried in the backyard.
Was that what was happening in the story? Because it just sounds like random death.
Well, it wasn't as far as the story goes. Summer wasn't dead. I think she was just out cold.
That's too bad.
But so it's a very Rick and Morty thing of you to say. So anyway, just once I realized, oh, okay, they're like. They're not. It's not one specific long adventure. Then that's fine. But the other thing, the art was really inconsistent. And Rick and Morty is such a simple, like color palette and simple, clean lines. And there were some times I'm looking at a panel in this book, going, "That just looks weird," and it doesn't look like the cartoon at all. It felt like it was rushed, and I don't know if it was, but it just looked like somebody drew it and they were like, "Oh, the legs don't look right," but we got to turn it in.
Deadline,
exactly. And I'm not going to try to flip through and find exactly what I was looking for, but there's like one moment, again, it's Summer, always coming back to Summer. No, it was Beth. Beth is like running through the kitchen, and she just looks awkward. But anyway, for those two things, I enjoyed reading it, and I'll probably keep reading it until the cartoon comes back on TV, and I can watch new episodes. I've seen the original cartoons like 3 times a piece.
I had noticed an increase in sales on the trades, and I kind of figured it's like people are waiting for something.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like they've developed such a following, and now they have us in their hands, in the palms of their hands.
That happens with like the Venture Brothers too.
Yeah, the Venture Brothers
just wait for that and.
Yeah,
it's interesting what you say about the art, because at Kaboom, is it Kaboom who does? Yeah, they do the properties. Adventure Time and My Little Pony's IDW, though.
Yeah.
But those two places, they're really pretty sharp with their art, even if it's not the same artist.
Yeah.
So it seems like Oni's just like,
yeah,
it's
and
good enough.
This is the panel I'm talking about. You can't see this on listening, but that Beth down there in the kitchen, just her legs are just crossed in a weird way, and it just looks unnatural. It doesn't look like something that you would see
like she doesn't have
in
knees.
The TV.
Mm. And her torso is really long.
Yeah, so it's just like, Yeah, all right, whatever.
but Rick, you got your fix, right?
I got my fix. Rick and Morty Volume 1. I bought 1 and 2. I haven't read 2 yet. I saw you have 3 here, so I may pick that up later on. But that's a book apart, and that is our show. Coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound Podcast is brought to you by the Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com. And I point to Cole every time I say that.
Yes, and I look away, and Cole waves.
And by Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email. Send me an email. at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. and send us quiz time questions if you want. But now this week our questions come to us from Nicole. Lay it on us, Nicole.
Quiz time is really hard for me because I've tried to come up with something that you guys could actually maybe sort of answer. So
well, that's not important. That's not important.
So yeah. It's not cats this time, but I did think about just keep going with the cats.
Cat themes are good. I approve of cat themes.
Yeah. I was listening to our last podcasts, and you guys kept talking about literary junk food, and so I thought that it would be fun to do history through comics, not just literary junk food. Who says comics aren't for learning? So this is just going to be simple, where I'm going to describe what the book is with the title, and then you guys just tell me who is the creator behind it. Huh. Okay? So, question here, the first one. Mouse is a graphic novel by an American cartoonist about his father, Vladek, a Polish Jew and Holocaust survivor, and his experiences through World War II. Who is the creator behind Mouse?
Art Spiegelman.
Art Spiegelman.
Yes. Mouse was one of the first graphic novels to receive significant academic attention in the English-speaking world. That's cool. These are kind of easy. Persepolis is a graphic novel, or comic book, autobiography, depicting a woman of Iranian descent, childhood through young adulthood. And it also depicts her parents, who were longtime activists who took part in protesting during the Iranian or Islamic Revolution in the years of 78 and 79. Who is this creator?
Marjan Satrapi.
Yes, yeah, see, that's good because you know how to say it better.
Well, I you know.
You just drop
it. I interviewed her years ago.
I have
the transcripts of that interview when the movie came out.
Like it's hot.
Yeah.
All right, next question. Palestine is a graphic novel about this author's experiences in the West Bank and Gaza Strip in 1991 and 1992. This author gives portrayals which emphasize the history and plight of the Palestinian people as groups and as individuals. Who is the author?
Joe Sacco.
Thank you. Oh, man. Those are such good books. And I was like, oh, darn it.
There's a good question that I put kind of for you, Ben, at the end here.
I can always count on you, Nicole.
Just pay attention. Just pay attention to the answers here. All right, question number 4, I think we're at. So published in 2004 by Drawn and Quarterly, this author gained access. Few Westerners had been allowed into North Korea's capital of Pyongyang for 2 months. He was allowed to see the culture and the lives of few North Koreans he encountered, and his friendships founded his findings found the basis of this graphic novel. Who is this Canadian artist creator guy? I just gave you a hint at the end there.
Oh, Canadian?
No, I think it's
guy.
It's guy.
Oh, Guy Delisle.
Yes.
There we go.
Yeah, see, I knew that was going to be a little tricky. So
I saw what you did there.
And then this is the last question, which is totally cheat question: is what do all of these creators have singularly in common? Singularly in common about their books.
They're all one word titles.
You're on the right path, but there's only usually there's a writer and an artist, but in this instance,
oh, they're both artists, writer. They're they do it all.
They do it all.
Yeah.
So that was totally a cheat for a 5-issue question.
Nice
and
job.
We are done.
Nice job.
That was a nice correlation. All right. Well, thank you, Nicole, and thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.
Woo.